can be one of those books that you open when you're reading your Bible and you come to in maybe your Bible for a year or whatever pattern you might be reading. Or if you just randomly open the Bible and see what God has to say for you, one of the things that you don't want to see in front of you is Job. Because it's got to be one of the hardest stories to read, to listen to relate to understand. And yet, if I open my newspaper this morning, what I see is more than 100 people are now believed to have been killed in a suicide bomb in Kabul, where attackers drove an ambulance past a police checkpoint into a crowded street and it exploded. And today, Afghanistan has declared a day of mourning. You don't actually have to look far in this world to find the kind of suffering that we see in Job. So does the Bible have any relevance to the suffering that we see day to day? Is it all just a good news story? So we see Job, and as you heard from the story, Job sat in his house and people began to come to him with terrible news. All of his sheep, cattle, and camels were stolen. A house fell on his children and they were killed. Then Job grew sick. He had disgusting sores all over his body. He itched and he burned. He couldn't sleep or move without pain. And his reaction, as we heard in the reading, "I was living in peace, but God took me by the throat and battered me and crushed me." And some days, don't we all feel like God's using us for target practice? We also see other stories of suffering, though, throughout the Bible. There's lots. Last week, you were talking about Naomi. In the days when the judges ruled and there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. While they were there, Naomi's husband died, and she was left with her two sons. And then, about 10 years later, both of her sons died as well. And Naomi was left with neither husband or sons. So is this contained to just the Old Testament? Well, a lot of the New Testament was written by a guy called Paul, either in his letters or about the work that he did. So what's Paul's life like? It must be good because he wrote so much of the Bible. He must have been blessed. But if we turn to Paul's 2 Corinthians, we see Paul's words. "I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was pelted with stones. 3 I was shipwrecked. I spent a day and a night in the open sea, constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, bandits, fellow Jews, from Gentiles. Danger in the city, danger in the country, danger at sea, and danger from false believers." Not so good either. So where does that leave us? If this story of suffering, of things that go wrong in our life, is all the way through the Bible, then it's all the way through our lives. And it needs to be all the way through our church. Sometimes when I walk in to church in a morning and somebody greets me at the door and says, "Hi, good morning, welcome, how are you today?" I might have my leg in plaster, a gash down my head, my arm in a sling, but I'm still going to reply, I'm fine, thank you, how are you? Because that's what we do, isn't it? But is that what we should do? We know from the time that we're spending at night shelter how important it is to have those conversations between people who are in a good place and those that are not in a good place at that moment. And one thing I can always say is at some point those two groups are going to be swapped. And if you are in a good place and giving encouragement, then I'm sure at some point you will be the one in need of encouragement. So together we must walk this life. Together we must face things. So who does Job have around him to support him, to comfort him, to help him? He has three friends. And these friends could very well be the friends that coined the phrase, with friends like these, who needs enemies? We all agree that what they say is terrible. They try to give comfort, and instead, all they do is berate him. So the first friend is initially the most sympathetic, and he accepts that Job is essentially a good man and says that if he's patient, everything will be restored. If you look at the life of Paul, do you find that everything is restored to him? It's not always the case, is it? But his friend goes on to say that Job is being corrected or disciplined. And he claims to have had a dream, a vision from God, which says about this. But most commentators agree that we're not supposed to believe the truth of that dream. We don't believe that it's actually from God or that it did happen, because it disagrees so much with everything else that goes on and is said. I wonder, though, how many times have you heard teaching from the Bible that comes along these lines? That things will be all right in the end. It's not the way, and it's not the truth, and it's not what's written. And we have to be very careful when we believe we've had a dream or a word for somebody to ensure that it really is from God. His second friend, is he any better? He's a firm believer that God is a God of retribution, and the death of Job's children cut off in their prime is an illustration of the fate of the wicked. Could you imagine for just one second what it would feel like if you had lost your children and somebody came up to you and said, it's because they were wicked, they deserved to die? Retribution? It's not right. So the third friend, is he any better? He also believes in retribution, but he says that it's Job's guilt. He believes that God is merciful, but the mercy has already been shown, and Job should expect no more mercy from God. Since Job's sin is not known to human beings and is denied by Job himself, it must be a secret sin that Job isn't willing to say. So if somebody comes up to you and says, all of your misfortunes are because of something that you've done wrong, how does that make you feel? So would you agree that with friends like these, who needs enemies? Would you agree that what they're saying, although they believe that they are saying things right, are not right? When we see somebody who is in a bad way, what's our reaction? Do we judge? If we're called to be a friend to somebody in a time of need, what do we do? Are we like those friends? Let's have a look at some others. Let's turn to Matthew 26, and Jesus is in a garden called Gethsemane. And he asks his friends that have been with him for the last few years to go and pray. He says to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Jesus is asking his friends to be friends. In his time of sorrow, in his time of trouble, he is reaching out to the people that should be there to support him. And what do? They fall asleep. So they may not be friends like before, friends like these who needs my enemies, but actually, with their actions, can we even say that they're friends in that moment of crisis? But we heard about a different friend last week. Naomi had lost everything, and Ruth was her friend. And this is what Ruth said: "Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you stay, I will stay." What kind of friend do you want to be? Ruth is the kind of friend that we call family. She is so close to Naomi. She is there for her. She's related by marriage, but not by blood. But you don't have to be related by anything to be a friend like that. A friend we call family. And when we come here in the morning, when we meet during the week, when we see our community around us, we are called to be church family. We're not called to be the ones that are condemned with friends like these who needs enemies. We're called to be the church family in the example that was given to us by Ruth. With every single story in the Bible, though, there is a phrase, "but God." And God features very heavily in the story of Job. But what does God know about suffering? What does God know about the ups and downs of our life? How can God relate to that? In this question, we have the advantage from the people at the time of Job, because we know about Jesus, and we know that he walked this earth. When he did, there was a man called Lazarus, and Lazarus died. And Lazarus was very close to Martha and Mary. And Jesus arrived to see Martha and Mary after Lazarus had died. Martha was distraught. Martha was grieving. Martha had lost somebody who was completely dear to her. She felt like the bottom of her life had fallen out with the death of Lazarus. And Jesus saw that. And his response is seen in John 11, verse 35. It just says, "Jesus wept." Jesus understands. If you've ever experienced that sort of loss, then know that Jesus understands it. And suffering. We can talk about the ups and downs of our lives, but at the end, we need to look back to the cross. because in that place, having had his friends deny him, turn their back on him, Jesus hung on a cross, beaten, bloody, alone, tormented, and died in one of the cruelest ways possible. Rob Bell says this: our tendency in the midst of suffering is to turn on God, to get angry and bitter and shake our fist at the sky and say, God, you don't know what it's like. You don't understand. You have no idea what I'm going through. You don't have a clue how much it hurts. The cross is God's way of taking away all our accusations, excuses, and arguments. The cross is God taking on flesh and blood and saying, me too. But Job didn't have this knowledge. But yet we've heard, when we heard the story earlier, that at the end of the story, he turns round and says, I'm convinced. You can do anything and everything. Nothing and no one can upset your plans. He explains that we don't understand the mind of our Creator, that God is bigger than that. And I, for one, am glad that God is bigger than I can understand, because I wouldn't want to worship a God that was contained in my own understanding. He is so much bigger than that. So what God said to him helped him. God showed himself as creator. He put things in perspective. He showed he was always there for all of us. This God, this creator, who was willing to suffer on the cross. With friends like these, who needs enemies? We can choose to be better friends than that. We can choose to walk in and treat each other as family, be open and honest with where we are. And yet, God is also always with us. And if our God is for us, then who can stand against? So listen to the words of God as he tells of his deeds. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone while the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy? Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb? When I made the clouds its garments and wrapped it in its thick darkness, when I fixed limits for it and set its doors and bars in place, when I said, this far you may come and no further, here is where your proud waves halt. Have you ever given orders to the morning or shown the dawn its place, that it may take the earth by its edges and shake the wicked out of it? The earth takes shape like clay under a seal. Its features stand out like those of a garment. The wicked are denied their light, and the upraised arm is broken. Have you journeyed to the springs of the deep or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the deepest darkness? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all of this. What is the way to the abode of light? And where does darkness reside? Can you take their places? Do you know the path to their dwellings? Surely you know, for you are already born. You have lived so many years. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or seen the storehouses of the hail, which I reserve for times of trouble, for days of war and battle? What is the way to the place where the lightning is dispersed, or the place where the east winds are scattered over the earth? Who cuts a channel for the torrents of rain and a path for the thunderstorm, or water a land where no one lives, an uninhabited desert, to satisfy a desolate wasteland and make it sprout with grass? Does the rain have a father? Who fathers the drops of dew? From whose womb comes the ice? Who gives birth to the frost of the heavens, when the waters become hard as stone, when the surface of the deep is frozen? These are the words of the Lord.